Let me commend you on how well you take direction. Let us pray. Oh God, it is good to gather here in this place we claim as a sanctuary, as your sanctuary, a place where we know you are present, where we gather to be safe and also to share our faith. And as we gather this evening, we bring along those victories and triumphs and things that have gone well, and we rejoice and give thanks to you for that. But we also bring along those things that make life hard, where things don't go the way we would like, or either with us or folks with us. And so we bring those concerns also. And in sharing them, we invite others to share those burdens with us. But most of all, we know that you are listening in. So to all those concerns, all those prayers, both spoken and unspoken, we entrust them to you, giving thanks for your faithfulness and trusting that your Spirit will move. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. So again, welcome to our evening with Eileen Christensen. Eileen, if you wouldn't mind, come on up here and taking a chair. Those of you that have been to some of these before, usually the person was up here and just took off and started talking. And Eileen, I'm going to share, and I think she shared it with many of you, was a little bit nervous. And so I said, how about if we just have a conversation and we'll have maybe have a few folks listening in on us. And so we're going to try this as a format. But I just want to thank you, Eileen, for stepping outside of your comfort zone just to allow your story of life with God to make a difference for others. How are you?
Well, my heart's not beating too fast.
So let's start off. I know that you've spent more time in the church than I have, at least for a longer time. And so you were involved in the church well before I was born. So why don't you just talk about a little bit about your life growing up as a child and kind of what church meant to you and what it looked like to mm-hmm. be a Christian at that point.
Well, I was born on a farm in south central Minnesota and in a very Scandinavian era in that, you know, in those days, people kind of came from their homelands and mm-hmm. settled in communities, and we had lots of Lutheran churches. In our town of about 1,000 people, there were 2 Lutheran churches, and one was of Swedish descent, the other was German, and south of our farm was another Lutheran church called Swedlanda Lutheran Church. I'm sure you can guess what nationality that was.
And I'm not so good at the Scandinavian ones.
Oh, well, it was Swedish.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And west of us, about 5 miles, was a Norwegian Lutheran church. So we certainly were surrounded by the church. And I did grow up in the church. We had Sunday school and vacation Bible school. We always had, every summer, 2 weeks of Bible school all day. So those were really special days. And I really have to say that in VBS I learned to sing the books of the Bible, and that's been a great help to me all through my life. So when you have to look up something in Hosea or 1st and 2nd Corinthians, why, I can sing the song and know where it is. I don't have to look in the index.
So to the confirmants here, that's why we're learning those songs, okay?
Oh, you're teaching them now?
We are.
Oh, great. And we had lots of activities in our church. We had a junior missionary society, and the reason I mention that is because it has something to do with my future. Mm. In the junior missionary society, we were always fortunate if there was a missionary that was home on furlough from, we'll say, Africa or China or India, they would come and speak to us. And as kids, that really meant something. We learned a lot about other countries and, it was really really good for us. We also learned how to conduct meetings. We had a president and a vice president and all the officers. And one year, I got to be president. Mm. And that year, we received an invitation from the Junior Missionary Society at Swedlanda to go and give a program. You know, we were great. We had people, young people who played instruments or gave readings. We could plan a good program. So we get to that afternoon, and a young man got up, and he was the president of their group, and he was thanking us for coming and introduced us and everything. And that man happened, or that boy happened to be Delmar Christensen.
Uh-huh.
So I think I was maybe about 11 or 12 years old.
So this was like that. So this was a power thing, power yeah. couple, you know. He was president, you were president,
yeah,
all right.
Yeah, we were. But I have to mention that because I have been doing a lot of searching through my life since Pastor Phil asked me to do this. And I kind of want you to see how God leads us, even from very young. So now, what should we go on to? My elementary education?
Well, now I know there's more to that story about you and...
Well, maybe it'll continue. I'll get to that later.
Okay.
You might have to wait a while for that. I went to, you know, there wasn't only the church that was the very center of all activities. We also had a lot of one-room schools in the area. Every community seemed to have a school. And it was also a very important part in not only our education, but in our community. And the Parent Teachers Association was a very active thing, and they too had programs. And my dad played the accordion, and I learned how to chord on the piano, and so often we would be asked to be entertainment. And I always liked music a lot. That was really important. I started taking piano lessons when I was very young, and that came to be very important as life went along, too. So I spent my first years in the country school. There were about, I think, 25 students there, and you got a well-rounded education because you could always listen to all the classes, what they were doing. And that's an experience that I'm sure, well, maybe some of you know what it's about, but that's a thing of the past, of course. And I went to high school in Hector, and was not a very large high school, but I think we were 28 or 30 in our class, which was pretty small.
But my mom was valedictorian in her class, and there were 11.
Oh, so. Really? And that was in Texas?
That was in Texas.
Whoa. Yeah. I want to mention when I was a freshman, which is grade 9 to you, there was a very important thing that happened. And it was a Sunday afternoon on December the 7th, 1941. And I was busy practicing my piano. And all of a sudden, my dad came rushing in to tell us what he had just heard on the radio. And I guess you probably know what it was. It was the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And that was a real shock, even though the war was going on, but it really brought it home. And the next day in school, we were all in the auditorium, and the superintendent and the principal came in, and they brought a radio in, and they said, "We are now going to listen to President Roosevelt's talk." And how war was declared on Japan. And that really was a scary time for me. Yeah. I was, well, not only me, I think a lot of kids were scared, and a lot of the young men. Of course, there had already been the draft, so many of them from our era had already gone into the service. So those were different days.
So did you know some people that died in the war then?
Oh, yes. We had two from our congregation, and my husband's brother was killed on D-Day on the Normandy invasion. Hmm. So that was a difficult time. And my husband was a year ahead of me in high school, and we rode the school bus together and had dated a little bit, but, you know, not really a date, just getting together in groups and things.
They were chaperoned, right?
Well, yeah. And one day, after school had started in the fall, he was on the bus a few days, and then all of a sudden, he wasn't on the bus. And the bus driver said, "Does anybody know what's happened to Delmer Christensen? Nobody's told me that he's sick or anything. He didn't show up." Well, he had gone and enlisted in the Navy at 17 years old. His parents had given him permission, and he always said, I'm not very good at school, and I know that probably I'll have to go in the draft, so I'm going to go in the Navy." So he did. And he spent his boot leave in Farragut, Idaho. And like the summer before is when his brother was killed in the invasion. Mm-hmm. So when they found out that they couldn't find his body or anything, then they had a memorial service. Mm-hmm. And Del came home. He got leave from the Navy. And to attend something like that at my age was 14, 15 years old, really made an impression on me. And I thought of his parents, how difficult it was for them. On the way back to the base, Del was in a very bad train wreck. And there were people killed. Fortunately, he was in a car that was not hurt. So that's another incident that made a lot of impression mm-hmm. on us. So.
Did he talk about his time in the war? Did he see action? No.
He didn't see action. Okay. He became a pharmacist first class, so he spent a lot of time with fellows that came back with shell shock, and he worked a lot with patients like that. So, but he didn't was not in the war.
I want to backtrack just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have some of our confirmation class here.
Okay.
So what do you remember your confirmation?
Oh, yes.
Would you mind just talking about that a little bit?
Okay. Well, we had to be 13 or 14 when we went into confirmation. It was just 1 year. And
Don't tell them that.
No. But I remember confirmation was more lecture than anything. And we did a lot of memorizing. I don't know if you kids have to memorize a lot, but we had to memorize all, the small catechism, what every meaning was, and there were always five or six Bible verses to go with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember having much discussion. It was mostly lecture. And when confirmation day came, before we could get confirmed, on the Friday night before, we had an examination in front of the whole congregation. I don't know if some of you maybe had the same experience, but we were seven boys and three girls in our class, and we were all seated up around the altar, and Pastor Palm would ask us a question. We didn't know what question we were going to get. We had to give the answer and all the Bible verses that we could with it, too. And I was horrified thinking, what if I get something I can't answer or my memory goes bad, just like tonight.
Do you remember your question?
No, I don't. I was just so glad when it was over. I don't know. And to this day, I can't really recite things word for word. Some people can, but I don't have that kind of a memory, I guess. So that was our confirmation. I do remember one kind of bad incident. We also had to all sit in one pew up at the front of the church, and the altar or the pulpit was up high. Mm-hmm. And the boys were all on one end and three girls were at the other, and somebody did something that got us giggling during the sermon.
Oh.
And when you start giggling and the whole pew was shaking and we could not stop, and Pastor Palm just stopped in his sermon and he just gave us the evil eye. And you're trying to stop laughing and it's very, very difficult. And I you know, to go home to your parents, and it's a little bit difficult. So that's one funny
incident. That's wonderful.
But Pastor Palm was a very caring person. I sang in the choir when I was very, very young. And one Sunday, I had stayed in town with my aunt and uncle. I think it was after play practice or something. And I didn't feel well in the morning. I said to my aunt, "Oh, I just can't go to church today." And she said, "Well, what seems to be the trouble?" "Well, I just don't feel well. I'd like to stay home." And she said, "Well, you didn't get home till a little after 11 last night. I don't know. I think maybe you better go." So I was singing in the choir. The hymn we were singing as our anthem was, "I Lay My Sins on Jesus." And I fainted in the last verse.
You were slain by the Spirit.
I was. I thought I could make it. And I really was sick. And I thought I could make it, but I didn't make it. And I woke up, and the pastor was looking down at me. "Are you all right? Are you all right?" So that was another funny experience.
Marvelous. You swooned.
I swooned, yeah.
So you've mentioned this guy named Dell a few times. Mm-hmm. At some point, it seems like y'all entered into some kind of a formal type relationship. Would you mind talking about how that transition from him being another guy on the bus to something beyond that happened?
Well, when he got out of the service after 3.5 years, he came back to the community. And I knew that he had probably had a girlfriend somewhere else. Mm. And there really weren't many boys around to date, but I mean, there were, you know, some. And we were on a party line. We happened to be on the same party line.
Now, you might have to explain what a party line is for the younger ones.
Well, it's not like cell phones. You know, you have the telephone, and everybody on the line had a different ring. Like, ours was, our number was J912, and it was too short and a long.
Too short and a long, okay.
Yeah, and his was J92, and they had too short. And I happened to hear this too short going one day, and I thought, "Oh, I'm just going to go and listen to it." And see, and sure enough, I heard him talking, and I thought, "Oh, he's back in the community." But that was it. Well, one Saturday, I had been going to college. I'd been going to our Lutheran college, Gustavus Adolphus College in St. Peter, and I was home for the summer. And one day a car came up, and it was the organist from the Swedlanda Lutheran Church and her husband, and they visited with my mother, and then they said, "Well, we're really not here to see you. We're here to see Eileen." So, okay. And so they said, "You know, my husband's brother is getting married up in Alexandria, Minnesota, about 150 miles north of us, this Saturday. And I've been asked to play the organ, and that's fine. But the organist, or the soloist, has been asked to sing the Lord's Prayer by Malott." And she said, "These old arthritic fingers, they just can't play all those runs. And I was wondering if you could go with us, and maybe you could play for that soloist."
Wow.
So I said, "Sure, that I don't have anything to do. That'll be fine. I'll get to see some different country." So we start out the next morning early, and we didn't go down the highway. We turned south, and we went to the church, Swedlanda Church. And, well, we're going to pick up the student pastor here because he's going to go to Bible camp up there, and so he's riding with us. So he got in the car, a very friendly young guy, And then we started out, and then pretty soon they turned left. And that's where Dell's farm was.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this guy standing at the end of the driveway. And they said, "Oh, we're going to pick Delmar Christensen up. He's an usher at the wedding." So that was kind of the beginning of something pretty great. And we went, drove up there, had the wedding, went through everything, and well, Bob was staying up there, so it was time to go home, and I think...
So who was Bob?
Bob was the student pastor that we were leaving there.
Right.
So we get in the car, and we drive a few miles, and it got so foggy that poor Mr. Hawquist was having an awful time to see. Well, Dell and I were in the back seat, and we got reacquainted that night.
You did?
Yeah.
Had a very good conversation,
we
didn't you?
We did. And the fog didn't bother us. Well, needless to say, we didn't get home till, I'm sure it was about 2 o'clock in the morning. My poor mother and dad were, well, not dad so much. He was more calm, but mom was really, you know.
Because you couldn't just pick up the cell phone and say, oh, we're late.
No, and we didn't think to stop in any town to phone or anything like that. And so she got over all her jitters, and then she said, but you look pretty happy. So I said, I think that maybe I'll have a date one of these days. And that was kind of the start of our romance.
And so how long after that, then, was it before you got married?
Well, then, of course, he hadn't finished high school. So he had to take those tests that you must take to get your diploma.
Oh, he was a year behind you.
He was 2 years behind.
Oh, okay.
By that time, he was, because I'd already had 2 years of college.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
And so he passed that test, and then he thought, his pastor advised him. He had other plans. He thought, oh, I'll get a job, I'll do something. And his pastor said, I think maybe you should think about furthering your education. Mm. I know that his pastor saw something in my husband that was worth going for. So he did. He took this test, and then he said, well, maybe I'll go to summer school at Gustavus and see how it goes, because I haven't been in school for, you know, a number of years. So he enrolled, and he took biology. And he came home, I think there were about 2 weeks left of the summer school course, and he said, I'm not meant for school. I think I'm going to quit. I might even quit before this term is over. My dad happened to be in the room next to us and heard this conversation. He came in, he says, do you mind if I put in my 2 cents? And he said, I don't think you should quit now. I think you should see if you can pass this course and just see how it goes. So I think he convinced him to go back, and he did finish the course. He didn't get a real good mark, but the professor said, you're just getting back into the things. I think maybe you better enroll. So he did. Mm-hmm. So my husband was 2 years behind me, but he came to Gustavus Adolphus College. So those were two great years, because we got reacquainted, and I think we had a very strong Lutheran Students Association, and we both got very involved in that. Often on weekends, there were churches that needed somebody to fill in for vacation time, or maybe the pastor was away. So we'd go on these deputations, and of course, I would always be playing the piano or singing in a trio or doing something like that, and often Del would give the message.
Uh-huh.
So that was the start, I think, of his feeling that God was calling him to go into the ministry.
And so, just what were you studying at the time? What was your major?
Well, my major was English and music.
Okay.
And I have to tell you about my first year in college, why, you know, it was great being there, away from home. Of course, we were in the dorm. There were two of us in the room, and We had a house mother who was great, but, you know, we had to be in, lights out at 10 o'clock every night, and on weekends we could stay out till 11. Well, I had a roommate who always could find some way to defy these rules, and I always had a class at 8 o'clock in the morning. She didn't have one till after lunch. And in a small room, I was not getting my studying done, and I finally had to ask if I could get a different roommate, and I got a different one. She was quiet as a mouse. She was very studious, And I had to really work to get a relationship with her. But it worked, and we roomed together then 4 years after that. So, another incident. When you first get away from home, mail meant so much. Now, of course, you can get on all your gadgets. Mm-hmm. But mail meant so much to us. And one day I was over in the post office, and I looked in my box, and there was a letter from somebody. And then I saw this poster on the wall, tryouts for the Gustavus Adolphus Choir, and listing the times and all those. So I thought, I wonder if I dare do that. I really loved to sing and loved to play and all those things. And so I finally got up nerve enough to phone and got an appointment and met the choir director. And I did get into the choir, so I sang 4 years in the Gustavus Adolphus Choir.
Well done.
Which was very good. And we always had a choir tour every spring. And the last year, my senior year, we went to New York and Pittsburgh and Washington, D.C., and all kinds of towns in between, which was great. So we spent those years together at school. And the year before graduation, my husband's brother was getting married, so we were home for the wedding. I played at the wedding, and I guess we knew that it was time to think about marriage. So he did ask me to marry. He went to my parents and asked their permission.
Of course.
So we were engaged 1 year before I graduated.
And so he got a degree there from Gustavus Adolphus. Mm-hmm. What was his degree in? Do you remember?
I don't even remember.
Probably not biology, though.
No, it wasn't anything in biology. I don't even remember for sure.
But then did he go straight into seminary then?
And we spent our first, we were married on June 16th, 1949. And he had 2 years of college left. So we lived, I was telling Scott, when I think of the place that we lived in when we were first, for the first 2 years of marriage, of course, there were a lot of married students coming back to college that had gotten out of the service. Mm. So the college bought these prefab trailers from some army base or something and moved them up on the campus.
So you lived in a trailer home.
We lived in a very small trailer, prefab. We did manage to buy an apartment-sized propane range, but we had no running water. We had an ice box. And for the facilities to go to the bathroom, take a shower, and do your washing, you had to walk down about a half a block to a place to go and do those things. Mm-hmm. So we had no conveniences. But everybody in that area was in the same boat. So it was a great experience. But it was primitive, I'm telling you. So Del finished his 2 years then. He graduated in 1951. And in order to get into the seminary in those days, you had to go through matriculation. Mm-hmm. And you went through they questioned you up and down, and you're married, how are you going to make this?
Okay.
And fortunately, of course, if you've been in the service, his tuition and books and all those things were paid for, which was a good thing. But was accepted. And so we moved to Moline, Illinois. Of course, it was the Quad City area. The Augustana Lutheran Seminary was in Rock Island, Illinois. So we moved down there, and we managed to get housing in a low-cost housing, but we had quite a nice place to live, and there were all kinds of other seminary students that lived in the area as well.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So that was the beginning. I mean, once you graduated from seminary and then got a call, then you would have been a pastor's wife.
Yeah.
So you were a pastor's wife for quite a while.
Well, I was. And like I saw him all through seminary. I always say I had a PhD because I did all his typing of all his papers.
He was thinking ahead, wasn't he?
Yeah, I guess he was pretty smart. I worked at the Augustana Book Concern. Well, then we had to go on intern.
Oh, yeah.
So you might be wondering how we ever got to Canada.
Well, how did you ever get to Canada?
Well, it was his intern appointment. He always said, when intern appointments come up, I hope to goodness they don't send me to a big church in Chicago or Los Angeles or anything. I just don't want to be a Joe boy for some pastor, because some of the pastors, the ones would come back from intern and they'd tell that's what their experience was. And I'd really like to go someplace where I would get the feel of being a pastor. So the day the intern appointments came out, he was working, so he couldn't go. He said, do you think you could go up to the hill and find out where we're going? So we go, and Dr. Mattson gets up there, and he says, we're going to do this alphabetically. And there were 62 in Dell's class, seminary class. Oh. That was the largest class from that, in that era. And so he goes to A's, B's, get to the C's. Christensen Delmar. And then he hesitated and he took the paper up and looked and he said, Assiniboia, Saskatchewan, Canada. Messiah and Emmanuel Lutheran Churches. And my heart sunk. Canada. And I
thought, are there Christians in Canada?
Yeah. Where is this? You know, and Del was, he was just happy as a clerk. We looked on the map, where is this? You know, just north of Montana. So off we go in June, and we get to the border, that goes fine, and we get on this gravel road, we get to Estevan, we get to Weyburn, it was dusty as could be, and dust was coming in our car, and we get to Assiniboia, and there it had rained for days. The main street was graveled. But we stopped at this filling station, and we said we're to meet somebody at the Messiah Lutheran Church, and could you direct it? And he says, just go down this street about 3 blocks, and there's a church on the corner. And we go down this street, and it was just a rut. You got in that rut, and you couldn't get out. And I thought, this is sure not like Minnesota or Illinois. So we got at the church and found our people that were going to meet us, and which was great. They were wonderful. And they were just so happy to have us there. And it was a mission congregation, so they had an intern the year before. So then they said, well, now we'll take you to the place that you're going to be living. We get to this place, and it was with... We were going to live with a couple. They were from the Presbyterian Church, an older couple, Scottish, lovely couple. But we had one bedroom, and we were to share cooking facilities. We had been married for 4 years and living on our own. This, I thought, this is not going to work. They were lovely people, and I think she realized that, you know, this is really not going to work. But you can certainly have your meals with us. I'm cooking anyway, she said, so we shared this for a while. Then, am I going on too long?
You're doing great.
Okay. Then my husband said, you know, we've got to get to learn to know our people. So we get on the road. We go visiting all our people. And here's another thing that just... got my ego. I had an ego, you know.
You did.
And we go, every place we went, you know, I mentioned they had an intern the year before. Every place we went, they would bring out this card with a picture of Fred and Anita Erson. Fred had been their intern the year before, and they had been married in June. Anita had been up there and visited, so they'd met her. Everybody brought this card out. Oh, you know, we had such a great year when Fred was here. Oh, my goodness. Oh, you know, it really got things off to a good start. And I tell you, I thought, if I see that card one more time, I am going to... I really was upset. I let that thing be in front of me.
Yeah.
So we go home this one night, and I said, you know, I think I'm going back to Minnesota. I really don't think this is going to work out. For one thing, these living accommodations are not good. And, of course, we were a mission congregation, so they only allowed you so much money to pay the intern plus the lodging. So Dell said, well, I'm going to talk to the council about that, and I think they realize this isn't working. And he said, you know, I know this is hard, but when you think how much those people loved their intern the last year, and how happy they are to have a church and get things going because they hadn't had a church for so long. He said, I think it's going to be okay. And maybe when we leave next June, they'll be saying it was, you know, very good to have you here. So.
Sounds like you married a pretty wise man.
I did. I did marry a very wise man.
We're going to jump forward and ask you to look back. Because you've talked about times where it's very clear to you, kind of God interceded or steered you in a particular direction. And so just as you look back over the years, imagine as a pastor's wife, there were lots of high times, but also some low times. And so just kind of looking back over your life with Dell, what are the times that come to mind where it was either in the moment or afterwards very clear that God was up to something?
Well, as I say, you know, when I look back now, I can see God leading. At the time, you live through it and you don't always see it. But as I look back now, I just think of all those instances when God, like going to on the intern to Saskatchewan, and then when he finished seminary, he got the call back there.
Oh, with that same congregation?
Same congregation.
Wow.
And so we already knew what the situation was there, and went through many times of, well, there was a building program for one thing, and you know what that does in a congregation. There's a lot of feelings, but my husband was great at working with people, and so they did the building there with all volunteer labor. All they had was one foreman, and they did all the ordering and bricks and mortar and all the others. So a wonderful, great congregation. We had so many wonderful experiences there.
How long did you stay there?
We were there for 7 years. I have to tell you, too, when my husband was ordained.
Oh, okay.
I was mentioning that. There were 62 in his class, and we were expecting a child at the time. And so I had to go back to Minneapolis because I had some health problems. And so we got their ordination was in the St. Paul Auditorium in St. Paul, Minnesota. And so the ordination was wonderful. I was just trying to look at some pictures that were taken and to see these 62 young men with their sponsors all around this big, huge altar in the St. Paul Auditorium was really something. But 2 days later, our daughter Linda was born. So there's a picture in the St. Paul paper of my husband wiping his brow. So that was a really wonderful. And then we spent 7 years in Assiniboia, and Scott was born there. And in the fall of 1962, Dell got the call to Augustana Lutheran Church in Saskatoon. And I know he'd had the call twice. And he first time he thought, no. For one thing, it's where the seminary is, and there's all these seminary professors and all these guys in the congregation, and I'm a farm boy, and I like the rural area, and that just suits me fine. But God had a different plan. So we moved to Saskatoon in 1962 in the fall, and we were there for 12 years. Yes, there were highs and lows, and I don't remember so many of the lows anymore.
That's wonderful.
I really feel that my husband and I had a shared ministry because, as I say, I was able to play the organ. If they couldn't find a choir director, I ended up being the organist and the choir director. And I know that at that time there were lots of women who were pastors' wives who maybe didn't think it was the best idea for a pastor's wife to do these things. And I know I wrestled with it. But I felt that God, I was a member of the congregation. I had these gifts, and they didn't seem to be able to find anybody else. So I took on the job. And that's why I say we had a shared ministry, mm-hmm. because we worked together at a lot of these things.
So looking back, what in thinking about the church today and how the church was either when you were younger and through the ages, or through the, not through the ages, but through your lifetime.
Through the ages.
You're not that old.
Oh, no.
But I'm just curious, what are the things that have stayed the same, but also what are the things that have changed?
Well, I really feel the ministry has just changed a lot, because even when Del was a pastor and we were in the church was still a center of community. Mm-hmm. And I feel we have a wonderful community here. But I know there are a lot of churches that don't. And unfortunately, some of the places like in Assiniboia, maybe even back in Saskatoon, there are, you know, the churches, we had so many Lutheran churches in Saskatoon, but they were all vibrant, all very, very active, and we had a wonderful ministerial. We always got together every month, all the Lutheran pastors and their wives. I don't think they have that anymore, so that is where I think things have really, really changed. Mm-hmm. Not for the better, I don't think.
Yeah, it's sort of the role that church plays in society in general has shifted tremendously.
Yes, it has.
And so.
And then, how did we get to Calgary?
Oh, how did you get to Calgary?
Well, after 12 years in Saskatoon, my husband sort of decided he'd always kind of wanted to go into the chaplaincy because of the work that he had done when he was in the Navy and working with all these people. So he took one quarter down to the University of Iowa one summer under Dr. David Belgum, who was well known in the CPE era. And he thought, yeah, I think this is where God wants me. So in 1973, in the fall, he decided to check out a few places, and there was one at Rochester, Minnesota, at the Methodist Hospital in connection with the Mayo Clinic. So he contacted them, and they said, well, we'd like to have an interview with you. So after Christmas in 73, we drove to Minnesota, and he had the interview and was accepted to come in the fall of 1974. So then they knew at Augustana that he was thinking of this, and so he said he would stay until August of that year, and then we left for a new adventure. And our daughter was going to go to a Bible school in near Winnipeg, and Scott, of course, had to leave his high school and go with us to Rochester to start grade 11. And you know what that's like when you...
It's tough.
When you move your son at that age. So then we left there in August and moved to Rochester, got an apartment, and had 1 year at the hospital there. And he really, really enjoyed that. He... had some really tough experiences because he was on the burn ward and many, many difficult things. But so then how do we get to Calgary? He thought he'd like to go to a hospital to be a chaplain. Things just were not opening up. But one day he got a call, and it was Arnold Johnson. Some of you remember Arnold Johnson from this congregation. And he said, you know, I have heard that Bethany Care Center here in Calgary, which is an auxiliary hospital, is looking for another chaplain because their patient numbers have grown so much, and their chaplain right now is just overworked. And you think you might be interested? Well, they all said, I don't know. Well, you know, have them contact me and I'll see. So, of course, they contacted him and they said, but we have to have an interview with you. So in July, we rented a car and drove up here to Calgary, and he had an interview with the board at Bethany. And then they said, is your wife here? We want to have an interview with her, too. So I think after looking through what was going on there, Del thought, you know, this might be a good place. Maybe God wants me here. Mm. And so that's what happened. So we moved back to Calgary in 1975.
Okay. And then you stayed here.
We are. But then we had to think of buying a house. We got Scott enrolled. He decided to go to E.P. Scarlett. He was going into grade 12 by that time. And he knew Kathy Johnson, Arnold and Emma's daughter. So he thought, well, that'd be a good school. I know one person there anyway. Is that right, Scott? And then we have to find lodging. We were fortunate enough to house sit for a couple that were going on a long vacation, so that worked out for about 6 weeks. But I didn't have a job, and the salary that they were offering Dell to start there was quite a lot lower than what he had been paid in the parish. So it was a little rough. What do we do? Do we rent or whatever? And I was looking for a job, but things just weren't opening up too much. So one day I went over to Bethany, and I was waiting for Dell to drive him home. And the administrator came by, and he came and sat by my table. I was having a cup of coffee. He said, how are things going? And I said, oh, good. Are you getting settled? Are you got a place to live yet? And I said, well, no, we have to find something. I said, our place is going to be, they'll be back soon. And I said, I haven't found a job yet. And then he kind of sat there for a while, and he said, you know, my secretary here is complaining. She's got so much work to do. And, you know, they were in a building program at that time, too. And she was just overworked. And she said, she keeps asking me if she couldn't get some help. He said, you type, do you? And I said, yeah. He said, well, how about it? Maybe you could come and work here for a while. So that was the opening there. And that ended up to be a job for me. For the next 18 years.
Wow.
So how has God led? It seemed like every time something came up, God was there to provide an answer. And my husband was an optimist, if there ever was one. He never seemed to get down on things. I was more of a pessimist. I would think, oh, this is absolutely not going to work. Well, they say opposites attract, so I think it was good. But God always provided, and I have seen it not only in our lives, but I've seen it in some of you that I know here. And in our talks, I have really realized how much God leads us, and we don't always realize it at the time, but it's so true. And I know when we were without a pastor, and we were praying for a pastor, and when I heard that there was a couple that was interested in coming here, I said, thank the Lord, a shared ministry.
Yeah.
And I really feel that way, Pastor Phil, that you and Pastor Laura are an answer to our prayers. And I can just see it. And I just want to say to you young people that just trust in the Lord. When you're young, when I was young, I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know even when I went to college, I hadn't decided where I was going to go or what I was going to do. But a Christianity professor came out from Gustavus College and knew that there was a young girl in that community that hadn't made up her mind, and he came and visited, and by the time he left, I was enrolled. I feel that was God leading. I feel every day I can see it. And I want to thank God for this opportunity, although I was scared out of my mind. And I just pray that, I pray for every young person here that you will really enjoy your confirmation time and your learning and your talking and your discussing. I thank you for all of you who are in the choir, who are involved in Sunday school, BLAST, Bible study, whatever. Because God can use every one of you. And I just pray that you'll all be there. I have, since my husband passed away, August 31st, 2011, I have felt a warmth here that I probably didn't feel before. Because people that I knew from Sunday mornings and stuff have stepped up to become my very, very good friends and have boosted me up many times when I've just felt like things weren't going so well. So, anything else you want to know?
There's, of course, lots more, but I think that's a marvelous place to stop. So thank you so much for being willing to share your story, to brave getting up in front of all these folks, and thank you for your words and for your continued ministry to each of us here. Thank you.
And I thank you because having to do this has made me think and remember and has brought the path that God laid out for me and for Dell and for Scott, for our daughter Linda. We had 5 grandsons. Well, 3 of them are married, so we got some granddaughters. Got great-grandchildren now. And our family is so blessed. The Lord has led each one of them. And I'm so thankful for that, too. I'm just thankful every single day.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks again. How about a round of applause? Didn't you do well?
Pastor Phil, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take off my earpiece.
Thank you. Oh. Thank you very much. There's some refreshments
out there.
No.
The master of ceremonies has to say something. So if y'all could please have a seat for just a moment. And confirmands, if your mentor is in the room, if you can move to where your mentor is, that would be fantastic. If your mentor is not in the room, you need to sit not with each other. So choose a group of adults or older people. So I still see there's a couple of you sitting together. Phil, you can help orchestrate that and have them sit, reassign them where Jamie and Kim are. Just have them sit with some adults. Okay, and if you could turn, all of you, if you could just turn to the people around you and have a brief conversation. And in that conversation, just share with each other what you heard in Eileen's story for your own faith life. So what was inspiring about her story that relates to your own life of faith? So just what did you hear? What was the gift to you tonight? And I'll let you know when you have just a few moments. Just take a few moments, maybe like 5 minutes, to have that conversation.